are on full alert as wind gusts have reached 45 miles per hour. Jan Stevens, Los Angeles.
An emphasis on children's hygiene is the best way to stop the spread of the H1N1 flu virus. That's the assessment of a researcher who says that measure is being mostly ignored by health officials in efforts to contain the illness. Tom Jefferson of the Cochrane Library said urging children to do things as simple as washing their hands is the most effective means of halting the spread of the virus. He says children are very sociable and have lots of physical contact. With IRN, USA Radio News, I'm Hope Duggar.
The Berkey Security Pack is your one-stop solution for unexpected emergencies. It provides you with purified water, light, power, and communications ability. The Security Pack includes a Berkey Light water purifier, an LED base, two Berkey Sport filtration bottles, the Berkey battery adapter, the Berkey MP solar charger, as well as a backup set of two Black Berkey purification elements. The Berkey Security Pack is important every day and a must during emergencies because it provides purified water, long-term low-energy lighting, backup battery power for your Berkey LEDs, free long-term solar power for communications devices such as radios, walkie-talkies, and cell phones, as well as power for small applications. Get the one-stop solution for your emergency and everyday needs. The Berkey Security Pack, a retail value of $518 for only $399 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Not yet available in Iowa.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Mr. William Murchison. We're going to be talking about his book, Mortal Follies, the Episcopalian and Episcopalianism and the Crisis of Mainline Christianity. But before we got to that, I just wanted to mention something that was said on the news about President Obama not wanting to actually release some pictures, maybe 40 pictures, of people being horribly tortured by American personnel because it would inflame people throughout the world against our country and against our soldiers. The thing is that they ought to be inflamed throughout the world because America used torture. There's no justification for it. Many of these people who are tortured were totally innocent. In fact, the major one, the articles today, pointing out that the people who were tortured him didn't want to torture him. They thought it was unqualified. He'd already told them everything he knew. But you see, there really are evil and wicked people working at the highest level of the Bush administration, and I fear they're in the Bush administration, in the Obama administration today. Nobody is going to be punished for this. Oh, we'll say how terrible it was. We promise not to do it again. Heavens, ladies and gentlemen, don't you remember the Tuskegee study, where for almost 40 years they plotted to kill 400 black men? If you don't know anything about it, we've got a great four tape set on it. This sort of thing shows the moral depravity that exists in certain elements of our society, not the overall society where people are basically good, but certainly within the realms of government where we have some of the most corrupt and evil people I've ever known. But one reason we have the problem is because the church has not spoken out. When was the last time you heard a Christian leader in America speak out against the use of torture on helpless prisoners? And why would you think that other countries wouldn't be justified in using torture on Americans when we've used it many times on innocent people? They say, well, waterboarding isn't torture. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you've never read the Taguba report, Major General Taguba's report, it's available on the Internet, although you can get it through us if you don't want to pull it down. Major General Taguba was told that if he told the truth about what really happened at Abu Ghraib, why he would lose his military career. And he had disobeyed orders. He told the truth, and he was ordered to retire. And, Chris, if you read that report about the use of electric wires attached to the genitalia of helpless prisoners, how could you possibly justify that? Somebody should go to prison. People were tortured to death. But you're never going to hear that talked about today. Oh, waterboarding isn't really torture. Well, we've got a moral problem in our society that permeates every aspect of our society, including the church, and that's what Mr. Murchison is writing about today in his book, Mortal Follies. Mr. Murchison, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Nante. It's my pleasure.
Why don't you tell us what motivated you to write the book and what the message is you're trying to get out? I know you focus on the Episcopalian Church because you're an Episcopalian, but these same problems already permeate so much of modern Christianity today, including the evangelical and fundamental branches of Christianity, which in a time of moral crisis chooses to maintain a position of silence.
Indeed. Let me put it in a kind of a conversational, fundamental way. The churches are institutions. Institutions have purposes. Those purposes will either be served or they will not be served. Depending on the extent to which they are served, they will be perceived by, let us call them, the consumers of their product, as having lived up to their charters, their warrants. If they do not live up to those purposes, the institutions then are doomed to wither. Now, let me say, first of all, let me anticipate objections to this way of putting things. The church is a supernatural institution. The church is the body of Christ in the world. It is not to be compared in a loose and casual way with institutions like AT&T or Safeway or General Motors or the U.S. Congress. So there are different specifications, but the same restrictions apply to the way the church functions as apply to those secular institutions I just mentioned. If the church is not living up to its divine charter, that is to say, if it is not concentrating on the spread of the gospel and on the building up of God's kingdom on earth, then the church is ignoring the purposes for which it exists specifically, and those to whom it is supposed to appeal will simply turn away, or if they are already involved with the church, they will tend to leave, just as customers will leave a failing secular institution that's not living up to its purposes. It's my contention in Mortal Follies that the churches are failing their divine mission to the extent that they ignore the callings of the gospel to reflect more keenly than they do gospel concerns, to reflect the obsessions of the modern secular society. The modern secular society is disintegrative. It's focused on individual choice and the kind of annihilation of overarching truths that are binding on all people in all times. The roots of this affliction are very deep. You can take them back to that little affair in the Garden of Eden with the talking snake if you want to, but most particularly they stem in our own time from the kind of cultural shocks that we got in the 1960s and early 1970s when our culture turned on authority and turned on authority figures and chose to make itself a culture of liberation. My concern is that the churches, broadly speaking, some churches more than others, but I think this is a trend that's going on in all religious bodies, have become chameleons. They blended into the cultural woodwork. They're not distinguishing themselves from the culture, and so to that extent, they're not only failing in their charter, they're being recognized by the culture itself as having failed, and the culture is turning its back on them in ways that I think Americans 10 to 20 to 30 years ago would find very surprising.
Well, of course, the thing is that I noticed you talk about, of course, how society changed in the 1960s, but you didn't mention the major thrust before this, and that is the Vietnam War, which many people perceived as being a totally unjust war. And, of course, I'll have to admit, at the time I supported the war. It was only later in the war when I realized we weren't even trying to win and came to the realization that this war was being waged not only against the innocent people over there in Vietnam who we never should have been fighting and killing, but also against the American people, because war demoralizes people, and that war specifically demoralized our nation, including people like, you know, what was his name, who was pushing LSD? Remember, he was the Harvard professor,
Timothy Leary.
And Timothy Leary, having worked with the CIA, was out there doing everything he could to push this disruption and this undermining of our society, and this whole idea of revolt against authority. But somebody should have revolted against authority. Why would we fight a 10-year war against a country the size of Mississippi and never try to win the war? And then, of course, wonder why some of the people, young people being asked to go over there and give their lives, would get disillusioned with what was going on.
Well, of course, a lot of it had to do with the particular personality and character of Lyndon Johnson, who tried to have guns and butter at the same time, to fight a war and at the same time conduct what he called the war on poverty, and indeed a war to change the cultural tone of the United States. He failed to do so, and I find that that there were legitimate grievances. I can recall many responsible people expressing legitimate grievances with the Vietnam War.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Mr. William Murchison, right here at Genesis. Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case there's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you, and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident that the financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of the International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience and concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the cold hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? For a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster, subscribe now at theinternationalforecaster.com or call 877-479-8178. Experience the difference. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain investment advice tailored just for you. Don't wait another minute. Subscribe today at theinternationalforecaster.com or call 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178.
Introducing the most efficient gravity filter available. You know, if you were to throw 100 ball bearings at a magnet, most would bounce off. But if you placed them on the magnet, all would stick. The same principle applies in water filtration. Most filtration systems force water through the filter at 60 to 90 PSI, causing water molecules to race through the filter in less than a second. The Brookie Light is different. Water molecules take 5 to 10 minutes to pass through the torturous path of the self-sterilizing filters. This allows the proprietary media formulation to remove and reduce pathogenic bacteria, cysts, chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, organic solvents, foul tastes, odors, heavy metals, and nitrates. It is so powerful it purifies raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds.
Get the advanced Berkey Light Purifier for only $279 by calling New Millennium 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
The world appears to be on the brink of collapse. Experts say a pinch of heirloom vegetable seed could soon be the most valuable resource on Earth because it will provide healthy food now and every year after. SurvivalistSeeds.com now has the heirloom garden seed time capsule, allowing you to store your seeds for the future anywhere, even underground, for 100 years. The heirloom garden seed time capsule can withstand 3 tons of weight, is 100% rodent-proof, waterproof, and comes with a whopping 6,000 healthy vegetable seeds from 20 varieties that will grow anywhere in the USA, unless you trust the government. The Heirloom Garden Seed Time Capsule and Heirloom Seeds from SurvivalistSeeds.com is your long-term food solution. Our competition charges 10 cents to $1.25 per seed for these same heirloom varieties. But you can now have a head of lettuce, a bundle of carrots, a basket of tomatoes, a giant watermelon, and 16 other varieties for about a penny a seed each. Be prepared. Buy your heirloom seeds today from SurvivalistSeeds.com and have food insurance for your family forever. Visit SurvivalistSeeds.com. SurvivalistSeeds.com is owned by Big John Lipscomb, host of the Don't Tread on Me radio show.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here, our guest is Mr. William Murchison. We're talking about his book, Mortal Follies, where he talks about certainly the problems that face our society, certainly after the Second World War, where there certainly was a resurgence of Christianity, and then in the 60s, why there was beginning to be a falling away, and certainly within the liberal church movement, they seem to have lost their relationship to the original Christian teachings. But you pick up the story there, Mr. Murchison.
Yes, I want to take it back just a little bit farther in time. I want to take it back to the Civil Rights Revolution. Now, the Civil Rights Revolution was the extraordinary event in our history. It had been building since the 1920s and 30s, if you want to know the historical truth. But in the 1950s and the 1960s, Americans decided that it was time to admit black Americans to the full privileges of citizenship, and that meant, of course, that they were to be acknowledged finally for what they were, which was children of God. Now the church is very rightly engaged in the defense of civil rights, and they got in a posture in consequence of it. Opposition to a certain kind of authority figure, and who stood in the way of the aspirations, the lawful aspirations of black Americans. All right, that's one element. The second element was what you mentioned earlier, and that's the opposition to the Vietnam War that built on top of the fervor for civil rights that America experienced in the 1960s. These were, to my way of thinking, instances that a civilized society could have appropriated without damage to what we call it, its psyche, or its way of understanding itself. You can look at civil rights as the Civil Rights Revolution as the overdue incorporation of a particular race, disadvantaged on account of color. You can look on opposition to the Vietnam War as if you like. I'm not encouraging it, but if you like, as opposition to an ill-advised or unjust foreign experience that the country had involved itself in. But we went on from there. The tenor of opposition to authority had been so well established by that time that we began a wrecking job with authority structures. And unfortunately, God was one of those who experienced the wrecking ball coming his way. Well, we began to question thousands of years of Christian experience and understanding, and the whole idea of Christian truth, the whole idea of Christian morality. Everything was fair game for the wrecking ball in those times. We didn't stop, in other words, with civil rights. We didn't stop with opposition to the war. In a very emotional way, we began to attack everything that seemed to be protected by authority, and the churches gleefully began to join in a decision for which they're paying, it seems to me, in bitter coin today in terms of the loss of public prestige and in terms of membership.
Certainly, go ahead.
Yes, well, I was simply going to say that once the churches began to take on the guise, the form of chameleons, which meant that they modeled themselves on the culture rather than asking the culture to model itself on the churches, then the churches became just another institution. Now, you know, Dr. Moncrief, you're a scholar, and you know as well as anyone else the dangers of facile generalization. I'm not going to put myself in the position of saying all churches have done this, and everything the churches have said has degraded the churches and has degraded the Christian experience. That's, of course, poppycock. There's nothing, there's no truth in that, and I would not try to assert a claim such as this. What I'm asserting is that there has been a strong tendency, especially among the mainline Protestant religions, denominations in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and the first decade of the 21st century, to assent to the insights and the assertions of the secular culture, to adopt those secular cultures' insights. The feminist revolution that the church has picked up with great facility and great enthusiasm, to the point that that many feminist theologians have now undertaken a makeover job on God. We have our Father, Mother God, and we have God referred to in various contexts as She. We have the rewriting of liturgies, including the Episcopal liturgy, to downplay the very idea of male dominance, the alleged idea of male dominance. We've gone on from there and to the gay rights revolution and the idea that these old Christian moral standards were of a piece with the same standards that repressed blacks and women, therefore the whole cultural idea of the churches, of many mainline churches, has been one of liberation. All right, now Christianity is a form of liberation itself from sin, from the innate afflictions of the human condition, but to talk about liberation from sin and to talk about liberation from the supposedly oppressive structures of human society, these are not the same things. And the churches have increasingly identified themselves not with the former, but with the latter. And that is much to their disadvantage, in my estimation.
Well, I certainly agree with you. In fact, of course, we see the increasing toleration of homosexuality, the effort to, establish women as priests specifically within the Episcopalian Church. And many,
yes.
In fact, many of the congregations have simply withdrawn from their association with the other. With the hierarchy, because it almost appears as if the hierarchy of many of the churches, but specifically the Episcopalian Church, but I'm not necessarily excluding the evangelicals, has been taken over by people with a different agenda. I mean, we find the head of the Anglican Church, which is, of course, the father, sort of the parent of the Episcopalian Church over there in Great Britain, he's a Druid. He dresses up as a Druid. He attends Druid ceremonies. I mean, what madness is this? And then, of course, here in this country, why, we find the head of the National Associations of Evangelical Christians, Ted Haggard, turns out to be a homosexual drug user who's using his position to undermine the very fabric of Christianity in this country. So we got a real problem in the churches. I agree with you.
Yes, we do, and it's part of adopting this culture of self-expression. It's an inward-looking attitude that we have adopted. That is to say, we tend to look within ourselves and for who we really are, as opposed to the roles that we suppose society has imposed on us, and in seeking liberation from other people's patterns and stereotypes, we adopt some very odd poses.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
today, we cannot afford to ignore the current state of our country, the economy, job layoffs, mass foreclosures, and now we are all at risk of being exposed to this new flu pandemic. The Center for Disease Control has declared a public health emergency across the United States. What can you do to prepare yourself? The answer is ZeroFlu.com. ZeroFlu.com offers you the very best in air purifiers. These revolutionary air purifiers protect up to 3,000 square feet of your home and stop 99.9% of airborne allergens, influenza, bacteria, viruses, pollen, dust, pet dander, black mold, MRSA, and more. Not only from the air, but from all surfaces. With no filters to replace ever, you save money. Prepare yourself today. To learn more, visit ZeroFlu.com. That's ZeroFlu.com. Or call 888-766-6066. 888-766-6066 today. ZeroFlu.com. Protecting you and your family one day at a time.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water treatment facilities use this media to reduce chlorine, iron, heavy metals, and bacteria. What about you? Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4438. Order today and save $14 by calling 1-888-803-4438.
You worry. If you don't, you don't understand the situation. Hi, summer's coming, and now's the time to learn self-sufficiency. If you're going to eat from nature's bounty of wild edible plants, remember, there's a learning curve. Experience is the best teacher, but that means time. To speed it up, you'll need to build on the wisdom of a teacher who has lived it. Author Linda Runyon is that teacher. Her Wild Food Knowledge Package is the crash course. The DVD gives you a 3-hour overview of her world directly from her. The book gives you an in-depth reference with all of the insider know-how you'll ever need. And her wild cards are your portable summary and cheat sheet for your field work. This 3-pronged learning system will take you from spectator to scholar to gourmet survivalist in weeks, not years. Folks, I can vouch that Linda's the real deal. She's my mom, and I watched her do it. So go to ofthefield.com or call 888-51-EAT-FREE. Start now. Knowledge is power. Better take action. I think a storm's coming.
Americans, do you know where your food comes from? Is it safe, secure, and healthy? Did you know most of our food is now contaminated with genetically modified ingredients? We at Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company have been helping people get pure garden seed for 12 years and carry over 1,200 varieties of GMO-free heirloom seed. Go to www.rareseeds.com for more information. That's rareseeds.com. Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company was started in 1998 by a 17-year-old as a hobby. It was developed out of a passion for preserving our vegetable heritage. The company now offers the largest selection of pure heirloom seeds, strive every year to bring back varieties like our forefathers grew. In times like these, we can't trust the government to keep our seeds safe. Every year at Baker Creek, we work to preserve the best of the oldest for future gardeners. We also offer affordable seed collections for long-term storage. Go to www.rareseeds.com and get your seeds from America's pure seed source. That's rareseeds.com.
You're listening to GCN. Genesis Communication Radio Network.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and certainly our guest is William Murchison. We're talking about his book, Mortal Follies. Mr. Murchison, would you like to get your webpage out or information on how people get your book?
My webpage is still in the building stage, but the book can be gotten, Dr. Monte, from Barnes & Noble, from Amazon.com, or Encounter Books. .com. All of those have it available, and I would certainly hope many people would be inspired to do it.
All right, very good. Well, I think it's important that we, that people actually, you know, understand what's going on, because we really do have a problem. Our churches should be, I believe, laying the moral foundation for our society. And yet, if you look and see what's going on, why, of course, you know, we have as many divorces in the church as we have in the general community. We have, you know, certainly a tremendous amount of divorce within the ministers of our country. It's said that the Protestant and ministers are the second largest profession as far as divorce is concerned. Something's happened to the foundation of our churches in this country. Don't you believe?
Yes, I do believe. And I understand that there are certain stresses in ministry that cause disintegration of marriage in ways that are maybe not as common to non-ministers. But when I have said that, when anyone has said that, I think we have to look a little bit deeper, because the churches have acknowledged and acquiesced in a culture that doesn't really value enduring family structures, enduring family relationships. The old Christian ethos had it that marriage was for a lifetime, and that standard was enforced on the ministers with great rigor. Episcopal priests who obtained divorces could not function as priests. This was a mere 30 years ago. I have met priests who have been in that condition and in that state. They couldn't function at one point because they had obtained divorces. But as the secular society has acquired the great love of divorce, because divorce embodies, you know, personal choice. Don't let that woman, don't let that man get in my way. We've grown apart. We don't know each other anymore. We have to look for new relationships in life. When our society has adopted that kind of blather as part of its creed, then the churches have two choices, and I think they've made the wrong choice. One choice is, of course, to affirm the old standard of marriage as a long time, as a permanent proposition against cultural objections, and the second is to give in to those cultural objections and let it all hang out. Basically, the churches, with some show of reluctance, have gone along with the idea that people are going to get divorced, and they're going to get remarried, and therefore we better figure out what we can do about it. If they taught the old doctrine with vigor and a serious standard of belief, then they might actually, I would guess, make some impact on the divorce culture that the United States is disgraced by. But they don't, alas. And so they blend once more into the cultural woodwork. You can't tell the church stand on divorce from the normal water cooler stand on divorce.
Well, now, of course, you've written a book. What is your solution to the problem for the Episcopalian Church, for the rest of the churches? In other words, how can they return to their real calling, which is saving souls rather than building programs and having a large audience?
Well, this is, of course, the hardest question in the world to answer. And it's always it's characteristic of us modern people to look for programmatic solutions. We'll form a committee, we'll raise money, we'll organize, and that's not to be despised. It does have its place in the world, but we're dealing with an institution of that is intimately linked to the divine. It's not our institution, it's God's institution, and God will have his way with the church. There are a couple of things I think that we ought to do. One thing is to stay together as much as possible. I have remained an Episcopalian despite the temptations to go elsewhere, even to go into some of the dissenting Anglican bodies that have been formed in the last few years. When I'm asked if I'm still an Episcopalian, I sometimes say yes, very still, but nonetheless, I remain such, and I do it partly for the opportunity to continue to witness to people of like mind. There are many of us. There are many of us still within the church who believe the same things and are horrified to see what's happened. That's one thing. The second thing that I would note is the failure of Orthodox people to make a concerted defense of their positions, of the truths that have been given them. In other words, as we say in the 21st century, to push back. Now, I don't mean push back in terms of organizing movements and having a show of hands. You don't have to have a show of hand about truth. Truth is. But I do think we've been very weak in terms of preaching and writing in contradiction of these modern trends. And that's one thing I've tried to do, Dr. Monty, by writing Mortal Follies. I'm attempting pushback in this book. I'm trying to do what I advise other people to do, which is to take a strong theological stand and then see what happens. And the third thing that we have to do, of course, is to get down on our knees and to pray. This is the Church of God. God will dispose of the Church according to His will and to our deserts as members of that Church. And we want to be worthy. But I think that we need to spend a whole lot of time on our knees praying, and a great many of my fellow Episcopalians have done this just in the past couple of weeks. The Anglican Consultative Council, which is a high muckamuck Anglican body, was deliberating in Kingston, Jamaica, up until a couple of days ago, over a document called the Ridley-Cambridge Charter, which was a kind of basic statement about what Anglicans believe and what we can do to make sure that belief spreads throughout the church. Well, I don't want to get into the details about the document and about what happened with it, but I will simply say that that Anglicans all over the world conducted vigils, actual vigils, prayer vigils, in a watchful state, remembering those bishops and clergy and laity who were gathered there in Kingston deliberating on the Anglican covenant. And this I found to be a very useful thing. The results of the meeting didn't have the results that they were not the results that many of us had hoped for. But I think what came out of this was a sense that prayer is a very powerful thing. Of course, we ought to have known that anyway, and we do know it. We just need to be reminded of it more often than we are. We need to get down on our knees and to ask for God's guidance, for His forgiveness, and for His guidance. And I hope that will be a hallmark of Christian, shall we say, pushback.
But you know,
the 21st century.
But you know, the problem is there somebody out there who has a specific agenda to change the church? Is this simply happening, or is there an organized effort to undermine Christianity in this country?
Well,
to take God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools, to change our morality, to ridicule Christianity from Hollywood and from the various networks? Is there an organized effort to undermine the very fabric and the moral and cultural fabric of our society? Is it happening by accident, or is it happening by intent? Well, when we get back, maybe we can get your thoughts on that. We'll be back in just a moment right here at Genesis Radio Network.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit it, you can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our Founding Fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Less than a century ago, half of the American public grew much of their own food. Today, it's been estimated that only 1% of Americans still grow their own food. During the Great Depression, over 18 million people suffered from starvation. And as America continues down its current path, for many, the reality of another depression is a very serious concern. With massive layoffs and unemployment at record levels, growing your own food will help you save money that you'd normally spend at the grocery store. Invest in your family's future by stocking up with your very own supply of seeds available from GetSeeds.net. Each order includes over 14,000 non-GMO, chemical-free seeds that will provide you with food for years. Call 877-394-6657 to get 100 varieties of our heirloom seeds for just $49. Once again, that's GetSeeds.net or call 877-394-6657 to establish your own food supply today.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones introducing you to the incredible Berkey Solar Charger, your source for free solar electricity. This portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey Solar Charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, and the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey Solar Charger for only $75 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is Mr. William Murchison. His book, Mortal Follies, Episcopalianism and the Crisis of Mainline Christianity. And, of course, I just raised the point, is it possible that somebody is trying to undermine the moral fabric, or do you think this is just sort of happening by accident?
Well, I think it's a disorganized conspiracy. I think that it's a remarkable coming together of a lot of like-minded people who just see themselves as so right and who are so convinced that that they are the bearers of a new revelation or a new understanding that everybody else should share with them, that they act in particular ways. I don't think they have meetings. Well, of course, they're always church meetings, but I don't think they sneak around at night going to cell meetings and work overtime to at actual projects of subversion. But they think alike, and what they think is that the old standards, the old norms of Christianity are just out of date and have got to be updated. They've got to be brought in line with cultural assumptions. And so they all agree on that, and so they all act together, and it does look like a conspiracy.
Well, of course, certainly they took God and prayer out of our schools in 1962. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they had to have known that when you remove the moral foundation of a country, you know, a couple of generations later, why the whole country would begin to fall apart. Certainly there was no justification on the basis of our Constitution or what the First Amendment said to take God and prayer out of our schools. So, obviously, somebody wanted to change the moral fabric of our society. Would you agree or would you disagree with that?
Well, I would agree that they saw prayer at a minimum as irrelevant irrelevant to the moral fabric of our society as they understood it, and then perhaps objectionable on its own terms as an expression of morality. Of someone else's morality, therefore it had to be removed. One of the great outrages of the Supreme Court decisions in the 1960s was this overriding of the public sense that existed at that time. I know it existed at that time. I was well aware of it. That God was a good thing, and that prayer to God was a good thing. It didn't have to be loud. It didn't have to be offensive. It didn't have to be specific in terms of theological commitments and understandings, but it was a good thing. And the secular understanding at that time, and this was really kind of an advance it was the first sign of what was coming in the 1960s. Was the secular understanding was that God just was not a very did not deserve to be a particularly important figure in our deliberations. So let's move him aside, get him out of here, and so there's no possibility of his corrupting public school students.
Well, of course, you know, in the Bible, a number of times, there's a phrase used, there's a conspiracy against God. I mean, certainly, if you get a strong concordance out and look up the word conspiracy, why the word is used repeatedly, and it's always a conspiracy against God. Do you think that could be perhaps what's going on today?
That's a very elegant literary way of putting it. Conspiracy is a meeting of like-minded folk for a particular purpose, and that, you know, I do think there's a kind of a secular, unspoken, disorganized conspiracy against God. It's not like the Bolshevik conspiracy, let's say, or the Menshevik conspiracy in Russia before the First World War and during it and the prelude to the overthrow of the Tsar, but. Heaven knows, and I'm sure heaven knows very well, and to its pain, that there is opposition here on earth to the edicts and the directives of God. This is an old, I mean, we know we're instructed in that apparently old-fashioned book, the Bible, that there's continuous war between God and Satan. And we know how the war is going to come out, but this is nothing new. Satan has his agents in the world, and Satan manifests himself. And I happen to believe in an objective Satan. I don't think Satan's just an idea. I find that every place we look throughout history, we can find plotting and planning by those who are opposed to God, whether they know that they are expressly helping the cause of Satan or not. They help it a good deal simply by rejecting the ordinances of God, the creator of heaven and earth, as we say in the creeds, as the Bible acknowledges. This is an extraordinary thing that people created by God would reject the Creator, to walk away from him, spit in his face, despise him.
Well, it may very well be that with the coming period of economic crisis, and I believe we're going to see a chaos along with that, but maybe people will start looking back to what's really important, those great things that faith and idealism and belief in God that once made America the envy of the world. Well, our guest today has been Mr. William Murchison. His book, Mortal Follies, fascinating reading. I want to thank you so very much for being our guest here, and I appreciate the fact we were able to get together today.
I want to thank you so much, Dr. Monteith, for having me on today. It's been a joy.
God bless. And if you ever have a chance, go up to our website, radioliberty.com. We have a little different approach to the world, but we're still coming from the Christian point of view. And anyway, God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless. Bye-bye.
All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind all of you out there in the listening audience that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And, of course, if you'd like to, go ahead and help us. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. My goodness, I guess they must be playing. Oh, there we go. Well, we hope that maybe our producer will do away with the buzzing. Under any circumstances, this is the time when I'd like to mention the fact that there is going to be the conspiracy conference. If you can put up with the buzzing, there's going to be a conspiracy conference in Santa Clara on the 6th and 7th of June. I'll be the lead-off speaker. If you'd like more information, why, you can call the number. It's called 925-449-6844. That's 925-449-6844. Or go to conspiracycon.com on the Internet. conspiracycon.com. Don't forget, we're going to have our all-day conference on the 25th of October. If we are still here, we are not in a chaotic situation by that time, and I hope and pray that we're not. But anyway, if you can make it, it's a beautiful area, the North Shore of Monterey Bay, one of the most beautiful spots in the world. And then, of course, we want to just mention we put together a new syllabus. It's called The Membership List of the Brotherhood of Darkness. And you can't really tell the players without a program, and this gives you the program. The reason, of course, that the Obama administration is going to turn the Chrysler Corporation over to Fiat is because the CEO of Fiat is a member of the Trilateral Commission. And, of course, the Trilateral Commission controls the Obama administration, as they have all previous administrations. In fact, between 1976 and the year 2008, every president and or vice president of the United States was a member of the Trilateral Commission. Do you honestly think that that just happened by accident? Three of the four Federal Reserve chairmen prior to Ben Bernanke were members of the Trilateral Commission. I mean, they control the State Department. There are about four members of the Trilateral Commission who hold all the lead positions. The National Security Advisor and the current administration, the Assistant National Security Advisor, the Deputy Secretary of State, are all members of the Trilateral Commission, the United Nations Ambassador. And if these things are true, why doesn't Rush Limbaugh tell us? Why? Because Rush Limbaugh is the finest conservative that money could buy. And when you understand that, you begin to understand what's really going on. We do hope you want to go to our website, get our material. We've got a great book called The Coming Battle, written in 1899 by Mr. Wahlberg, and then we have another book written in 1935 by Gertrude Krugman called The Money Creators that tells you how they create money out of nothing. We've got a great syllabus. It's called Financial Armageddon, and you'll find a lot of information there that's been thoroughly suppressed, including Franklin Roosevelt's letter to Colonel House in 1933, where he says, as you and I know, why the financial elements in the large centers has owned the government since the days of Andrew Jackson. And we are going to see now a replay of that.